you need to just swear. Just use some profanity.
You just need to cuss. In your mind, you're thinking, is this really the right thing to do?
You are listening to EMS with your hosts, Eric Axine and Matt Ball.
Now, so the last time we talked, we visited, we talked about the fire service, life in the firehouse. All the pros and cons, or the pros, I guess, of being a firefighter, the culture, the camaraderie, the brotherhood, the sisterhood. And it is. All those are great things. It's the greatest job in the world.
But you did a good job, though, painting the reality of what life is really like as a firefighter.
Yes.
But I don't think we talked a lot about some of those situations and circumstances that can really remind you of the gravity of your job. I don't know how you describe it.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to say it, gravity, because it is the weight, gravity. Mm-hmm. It's crazy because, you know, most of what we do is, you know, BLS calls, fire alarms, you know, even structure fires, you know. I'd say 95% of what we do is pretty run-of-the-mill. We get serious patients, but not necessarily, you know, you get STEMIs or strokes or even a CPR. You know, I mean, we all understand that people die, you know, at some point, and when you run on an older person that has, you know, reached their time limit and they expire, you know, it's not overly traumatic. But then there's those, I don't even know what the statistically those numbers are, but you get those rare calls where it's difficult, very difficult scenes, very difficult for the responders, very difficult for the hospital staff when we bring those patients in.
But what I think is different and sometimes tougher is the fact that in your line of work, being a more hazardous and a risky job, there's a higher likelihood that you're going to lose a colleague. Mm-hmm. And then not only that, because of the nature of your job, you could be responding on that colleague.
Yes.
So there's a reality of the job you're choosing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had to treat people who I knew.
Sure.
I've had to code people that I knew.
Yeah.
That's a part of my job where I've got to do my job. Mm-hmm. And I think that you got to take that even a step further in your line of work where you're going to be responding potentially to a friend, colleague.
Yeah.
Those are
a lot of times you don't even know. You know, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. We've had numerous situations where I work where both police and fire have had to respond on incidents where it was you know, firefighters or police officers for different reasons, you know, 911 was contacted. And like I say, sometimes you know, and sometimes you don't know what you're going on. But those are difficult, you know, extremely difficult situations, especially, you know, if you're treating somebody that you know. It just brings the level of difficulty, I mean, exponentially.
I'm going to go off script a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have scripts here.
No.
There's no teleprompter.
Correct.
But we do talk ahead of time about things that we want to say in our podcast.
Yeah,
but I'm going to go off script a little bit, so don't be too nervous.
Not nervous.
But we've had some tragedies recently in your department.
Mm-hmm.
And being former medical director for your department, I feel
you're part of
very
the
close.
100%.
Love you guys.
Yes.
But I'd like you to maybe take us to how you felt in the last 6 months, losing three of your colleagues.
Yep.
In different ways.
Yep.
And they're all very different, but maybe you could take us behind the scenes a little bit, how you felt and how you walked through that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's always a tragedy, regardless of how somebody goes, always a tragedy. We've experienced quite a bit of loss, lately, with my department, as you know. And, I'll to try to find the good in it. Obviously, first off, I'll say, you know, a lot of times those tragedies can't be avoided. Things happen.
Yeah.
And especially when you respond, I think one of the things that we have to keep in our head is that we didn't create, whether this is somebody that we know or somebody that we don't know, we didn't create the emergency. We didn't create the incident, right? And we do our best, obviously, when we go on these calls. But it exponentially takes the degree of difficulty up, even Siri says that, takes the degree of difficulty up for those people responding to those calls.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it's but what's neat to find the silver lining, so to speak, what's neat is to always see the family and the brotherhood and the sisterhood of the fire service come together, even outside the department, the local, the surrounding departments, you know, just the outpouring of support from everybody offering, you know, to come fill in at the stations, to people, citizens bringing food to the stations, just to focus more on the positive is, I think, it's super important. But yeah, it's very difficult when you have to respond on anybody that you know that has experienced, you know, an accident of some sort, and you have to you know, run on them and work on them. It's extremely difficult. One thing I would say is that is why I am part of our group, and this is not a plug, obviously, for our continuing education stuff, but this is why I am passionate about EMS. And I know that EMS, and we've talked about this a lot, is kind of in some ways the redheaded stepchild of the fire service. But the reality is that we've had numerous things where if capable paramedics were not on the scenes of some of these calls, the outcomes of some of these things would not have been what they are. We have a firefighter that works today and is alive today because of he had capable paramedics there when he had an extreme medical emergency. And had he not had capable paramedics or paramedics that just wanted to give him a dose of diesel, the outcome wouldn't have been the same. And so that's why I am so passionate. I know you are too. Yeah. But sometimes it's us that we run on. It's not just Joe Citizen. It's our own people. And with heart attacks being such a huge factor of firefighter deaths, it is immensely important to me, and that's why I'm passionate about knowing what to do in these emergencies, because it might be our brother or sister that we're working on, you know, and we want to be at our best in those moments.
That's our why.
That's our why, absolutely.
Yep.
But
well, and I think to elaborate on what you said, I want to be really clear. You've said it before, everybody's heart, well, the vast majority of people's hearts are in the right place.
Yes.
But to be able, to actually be able to recognize the signs and to be able to perform those procedures, those life-saving procedures, it takes some pretty keen assessment skills and management skills with practice and knowledge. I mean, it's a muscle you have to work out to be able to utilize it. And there are a lot of very, very good paramedics out there that do their job to great job out there serving our community for the bread and butter stuff.
Yep.
But then there are those really unique calls that require a very unique skill set that I'd like to see those things expanded.
Yes.
Because, you know, the regardless of your department, regardless of the agency or municipality, these things happen.
Yep.
And being on point with these things saves lives.
Absolutely. Yep.
And a lot of the time we can save by doing these things in the pre-hospital environment, not waiting for the ER, saves lives.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I remember we were talking earlier about, you know, I've only done a surgical crack one time in the field. And I remember thinking to myself, I saw all the indicators that it needed to be done, and I still was like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
You know, I'm on a living room floor of this guy's home, you know, but all I can think is, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
But I knew that it had to be done. That was the only thing that could work. And I remember after it was like I kind of had to take a breath. Like, just it was just, you know, that's an extremely stressful thing. And part of it in my mind at that time was, because you have to make, you know, you have to make these decisions right now.
Yeah.
And in the back of your mind, at least in the back of my mind, and I've talked to other people that have been in similar situations where they're like, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, is this really the right thing to do?
Yeah.
You know, does this guy really need to, do I really need to cut this guy's throat and put a tube in his, but, you know, again, you see all the indicators, but this is all happening. You're processing all this information super fast, and you're just always worried, like, if I do this wrong, is somebody going to come back and say, oh, well, I missed this because I'm trying to process this? It's such a stressful, there's so many things that we do when we make these decisions. And that's where experience really comes in. You can't train somebody for that. I mean, you train over those things and you look for the indicators, but in the moment it happens so fast, as you know, that you got to make a life or death split second decision, and it could go right or wrong.
These are highly emotional experiences. Yeah. I pulled a group of firefighters recently on their greatest fear, and one of the common ones was being in a life-threatening situation and making the wrong decision.
Yeah.
That's a big fear.
Huge.
So when you're in that position where you have to make that life-saving decision, that's emotionally taxing. And then afterwards, like you said, you need a minute.
Yeah.
But
sometimes you can't take a minute.
No, that's
because we're in the house. I still got to continue to transport this guy and resuscitate that guy. And it's extremely difficult. And that doesn't, again, that wasn't even somebody that I knew. So adding that stress on top of it, I couldn't even imagine the level of stress. And in today, 2023 we're in, and the amount of, unfortunately, mass shootings that we have going on, and the traumatic nature of those calls. I mean, I pray that I never have to go on one of those, and I pray for anybody that has gone on one of those. They're just horrific scenes. You're dealing with, a call that the level of trauma that you're visualizing, and then, working in a suburban environment, we don't do a tremendous amount of trauma.
No.
It's not like being in the military in a war zone. You kind of expect that kind of trauma. I mean, we certainly get our share of trauma and but not to that level. And so that's probably going to be a once in a career scene. And then you're having to operate at an extremely high skill level of recognizing what's going on, but now you're passing people that normally you would stop and treat, but in those situations you can't. You have to save the max amount of people. We've talked about that before, mass casualty situations. So I can't imagine that level of stress on first responders going to those scenes. Just horrendous.
Well, that recently occurred in our community, where we had a traumatic loss of a colleague and a friend, and then 6 minutes after the beginning of
we get another
tragedy. I know it hit close to home for me in multiple ways. I had a relationship with the fallen colleague. Loved him dearly. And then one of the families of kids at my kid's school were killed.
The parents
were killed, and one of the siblings was killed. The youngest child, I think the middle child, actually survived with no family. Another family lost both their kids.
I mean,
this is a tragedy. This is really tragic. And the reality, though, is that, and again, this is kind of the purpose of this podcast, is that I know one of my best friends in the area was the ER doc on shift, taking these families, these kids, and having to treat them. And it was special for me from an ER perspective to see people coming in from home offering to help. And there's a lot of support there, medically speaking. And I also, through my history as a medical director, saw the same thing in the fire service, people covering for each other, and our certain departments backfilling people to help so they could be at the memorial service and covering, and just loving on each other through a tough time. But the reality is that when something traumatic happens, you got to stand up and be ready for that next call. And even if it was nice to see some of the guys on scene who maybe responded to these calls, have a shift off, get some time off, but they got to come back. That's the reality. That's what you're signing up for, is to be the first responder to these horrific things.
Yeah, it's, I've heard people talk about PTSD and like military. Military, typically they go into extreme environments. They're there for a short period of time, 6-8 months, a year, But typically it's a lot of trauma. I mean, they experience a tremendous amount of trauma. But I've heard even veterans say that the amount of the prolonged trauma with first responders, police, fire, EMS, all of it, but it's over 20-year career, 25, 30-year career.
It accumulates.
So it's a different type of PTSD and that kind of stuff. It's difficult. And these kind of scenes where we respond on our own certainly are, make it worse. It's the environment today is difficult for sure.
And I think it's worth saying, too, for me personally, that I don't understand. I'm not military.
Yeah,
I'm,
me either.
I don't understand even the trauma of what families had experienced in the last little bit here in our area, what military families experience and have to live with. One thing that I've learned now being older is that until you've walked in somebody else's shoes, you really don't understand the trauma of things. People handle it and feel it in different ways. But I think the reality, and everybody would agree with this, is there are certain jobs that bring along a certain amount of trauma and a certain amount of moral or emotional injury. However that may manifest in certain lines of work. And this job you've chosen, firefighter, there's a certain amount of trauma involved in it. And that's the reality of the job. You got to know that when you choose it. You know?
And I don't think a lot of people realize that, too, because I've had people train, or I've had people come in that I've trained who you can tell that they don't understand. Because, like I say, it is a rare thing. Thankfully, it's a very rare thing that you go on these bad calls or calls with people that you might know. But they, it's like, and there's no way you can prepare somebody for that emotionally. You know, I mean, well, you can go through the skills and those kind of things, but until you're on that scene, there's no way to prepare for that. I remember one time going on a scene, it was a pediatric scene, tragic, traumatic scene, and we got back to the station. And one thing I'll say, at least about my department, I hope everybody's department is this supportive, always has been, is anytime I've gone on a call where it was, you know, somewhat of a traumatic call, we have had great support from our officers and our administrative staff, where if you needed to go home, I could go up to my captain and say, I can't continue today. And they, without question, get in your truck and go home. And I remember we came back from this call in particular, and our captain came out to us, you know, sat us down, kind of a debrief after the call, and said, like, hey, if any of you need to go home and hug your kids, go. You're cleared for the rest of your shift, approved time off, go. My mindset, though, was, okay, I'm going to go home, but my kids, I mean, I want to see my kids and I want to see my wife, but at the same time, they have no idea what I'm experiencing. They don't understand what I just saw, what I just had to do. But my other brothers and sisters that were on the same call as I were, that are parents as well, they know exactly what I'm thinking and feeling. And so for me, not, you know, everybody processes that differently, but for me, that day I was like, I'd rather stay here at work and be around the people that I know they're thinking and feeling and experience the same things that I did. I would rather stay around them, because to me that was a better way to deal with it than go home and mom and kids, you know, they're like, oh, hey, dad, and they want to go play or go, you know, whatever. And it's just, that was my thought process behind it.
When I called one of my friends who responded to a tragedy recently, he answered the phone, very so gratefully answered the phone. I just wanted him to know that I was thinking of him and praying for him. He was released by your department to go to kind of just go home, you know, kind of like you said. And they didn't go home. They went out to go drink some beers together and to debrief and talk about it. And, you know, I've experienced the same thing in the ER where a bad call, I can't leave the middle of the shift because I'm a nocturnist and I'm the only one awake. So I have to keep working, which was its own trauma, you know. I can't stop. I have to keep going. But coming home after some of these terrible shifts, I'll never forget them. But when I've come home, it's hard to explain it. You can't. And then people hear you talk about it. And listen, I can't I can't explain the military trauma. And I don't fully understand your trauma you have to deal with. But I can say from an ER doctor standpoint, the moral injury I experienced, it's hard to describe. And when I talk to other people about it, if they're not doctors, it's really difficult to fully describe the kind of trauma you feel with that 9-day-old baby in your arms with mom and dad behind you, and you can't save him. And there's being a physician who's kind of, I mean, listen, you see stuff that never gets to the ER that's traumatizing. Because those decapitations and all the terrible things you see that are not salvageable is traumatic. And they go to the morgue, but you have to deal with it. I'm on the flip side is that me as the ER doctor, sometimes I'm, if I can't save them, then there's nobody else.
Yeah.
I'm kind of the last one holding the ball, you know?
Yep.
And so that carries its trauma for me when I can't save somebody. I would imagine sometimes in your line of work where there's a certain amount of relief and I got them to the ER, hand them off.
For sure.
And so for me, taking that hand off from you is traumatic when I can't do anything.
Yeah, right.
Or it's stress for me, be honest. You know, it's stressful for me. I have the same fear you do. Mm-hmm. Being in a life-threatening situation where if I make the wrong decision, I'm not thinking about getting sued. I'm not thinking about...
No, it's being bad, detrimental.
Being tired even. I'm not thinking about that last patient. I'm so focused on this emergency that you just kind of kick it into a new gear.
Yes.
And you don't think about fear.
Yeah.
You just, you do what you need to do.
Right.
Unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't go well.
Right.
And sometimes it's just their time.
Yep.
But even in that case, I always think, man, is there something I could have done?
Absolutely. Second guess yourself all the time. Yeah. Yeah. If I'd have done this faster or done this different or gave this thing and, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Monday morning quarterback in the Super Bowl is really easy to do. But making those critical decisions, you know, immediately, it's extremely difficult. But like you said, going out, you know, you said those guys went out. You know, I think that everybody deals with emotional trauma, PTSD, whatever word you want to put on it. Everybody deals with it differently because everybody has a different way that they process those things. But for me, I know, and for a lot of first responders, being able to go out with other first responders is some of the best therapy for me. Because like I said, I could go home and talk to my wife and she doesn't, know, it, with all the best intentions. Your wife doesn't know what it's like to be an ER physician, you know. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows. It's like me going to talk to somebody that's been in the military and I don't know what that's like. I have no, I've never experienced that. And so I think there is a lot to, and this is what's interesting, since we've had a lot of these tragedies in my department, we've had, our department's been great, sent out counselors, different things to make sure people are good, give us resources, you know, if we need to talk to people. But most of the time, I find the most helpful thing, and a lot of guys, I think, find the most helpful thing is sitting around that kitchen table, you know, after dinner and just talking with your crew, you know, talking with your brothers and sisters because they know they're probably feeling and experienced the same things you are. And, that I know that some of the guys that have dealt with some of the stuff, they've come out and sat around and they said sitting around a smoking table or the kitchen table was some of the best therapy they've ever had. You go to these people with all these degrees and all these things, and some of the best therapy is sitting around hearing a bunch of firemen cuss and discuss and drink coffee and, you know, break balls for like, it's honest, it's raw. And that's what firemen are. You know why? Because that's what these calls are. They're not pretty. They're not controlled. They're raw. They're nasty. They're real world. And dealing with that and being honest about what it is, you know, all the pretty words that you learn in counselor school or whatever. And I mean, God bless those people for doing, they're trying to do the right thing. But like I say, just sitting around cussing and discussing with a bunch of other firemen is, it's just real. And I think that that's kind of with the military, it's the same thing. Like, dude, you're a counselor. You don't know what I saw over there. You don't come at me with all your stuff, you know.
We've talked about this before, and I really believe this is a position, that the best thing we can do for our health has nothing to do with the exercise and the nutrition. One of the biggest things we can do, we're not going to get into it right now, is the tribe. In my acronym, REST, is the T is tribe. It's the team. It's the community. I got a call from a firefighter the other day who, well, he texted me first and was saying, man, I really need you to pray for me.
Yeah.
Because they know my faith and they oftentimes will text me and say, pray for me. Yeah. And I love that. That's one of the things I love about my relationship with these guys. And a lot of them are not believers or Christian or whatever.
Right.
They're different faith backgrounds, but they know that I pray and they'll call me to pray for them.
Yeah.
And this particular firefighter texted me and says, man, I'm struggling. I just don't know what to do. I'm tired. I'm tired of it. Pray for me. It's like, oh no, what's going on, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to call him and he's not answering his phone.
Yeah.
And then he did text me later that night. He's like, I'm okay. I'll call you in the morning kind of thing.
Yeah.
He's like, okay,
good. Just needed, yeah.
Well, we talked the next morning, and I told him I prayed for him. I just wanted to know what was going on because he didn't tell me anything. Anyway, point is, he's starting to tell me the story, and I said, hey, hold on a second. You know, do you need to just swear? Just use some yeah, profanity.
You just need to cuss.
Yes, and he exactly. said, it effing sucks, is what he said. And yeah. we both laughed.
Yes, yes.
And we both smiled, and it just yeah. it just brought the... I think he was just honest.
Yeah, he was trying to be appropriate. Yeah. Or, yeah, exactly.
And so for me, I felt like he was being honest that it was ugly, yes. what was going on.
Yes.
And he was honest with me, and I smiled and laughed
yeah.
and accepted him,
yes.
you know, and
yes.
I it's not a big deal, but when you sometimes just let your guard down and just yeah. say it effing sucks. I don't swear, but right, you right. know, it's okay.
Sometimes it's cathartic to do
yeah.
that. Yes.
And that's my point. And I think that's part of the community is to kind of share. It's like, yes. you know what? I may not fully understand what's going on and how you feel, but I'm here and I want to understand.
Well, and that's like dark humor. You know, people talk about the fire service and dark humor. Yeah. And a lot of it, that's part of what it is, you know, because yeah. like I said, it's real world. And the real world, yeah. some of the things that we go on are not pretty at all. They're terrible, yeah. terrible.
And the real world is where I want to be.
Exactly.
And I would be able to hug a guy.
Exactly.
Pray for a guy.
Yep.
Be
Let
with a guy,
scream,
girl.
Cry, whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. Whatever you need to do. That's
Raw
how you're
emotion.
Feeling.
Absolutely.
And I think yep. when you're honest about those things and have an avenue for it, it's healthy. When you don't,
yeah.
and you're hiding it or you're isolated, that can be dangerous.
Yep.
I think the reality of the fire station, to kind of circle back to how
yep.
it is.
Yeah.
One of the things I loved about being in the fire service back when the earth was young was the camaraderie.
Yeah.
The camaraderie. And that's part of what I love about being a medical director.
Sure.
I was on a ride out a few days ago, and the guys were apologizing because we didn't get a lot of calls. And they're like, sorry, we only got one call during this time
you
I was there for 6 hours and one call. And they were kind of apologizing to me. Yeah. It's like, that's not why I'm here.
Yeah.
It's the camaraderie. It's the hanging out.
And food.
And the food.
The coffee.
Yeah. So it's the relationships.
Yeah.
I think that's the most important thing. But the point is the reality of the fire service is there's a camaraderie that's built in. And if you choose to engage in it, it can be very powerful. If you choose to isolate yourself, it can be bad for the whole station
yeah.
And for you.
Yeah.
So
that's not good. Yeah, yeah, isolating yourself is not. And that's really what it's. These calls are terrible that we're kind of talking about. Mm-hmm. These calls, these situations, they're horrible. But on the bright side of them, that's what makes the camaraderie, because that brotherhood formed in battle, so to speak, with military, to use a military term, you know, that's mm-hmm. what that bond is stronger than anything. When you're bonded together in trauma, it's huge, and that's where that camaraderie comes from.
Yeah,
which is really cool, and that's the beauty of the fire service. That's
true.
the light at the end of the tunnel, the silver lining of these horrible things, is the fact that unfortunately. That's the glue that makes us a brotherhood and a sisterhood and has us form bonds that will form for the rest of our lives, you know, that nobody else can understand. So.
Well, I think you just hit the nail on the head. That's a good way, I think, to end our podcast.
Yeah.
Terribly traumatic, but wonderfully bound and unified in the community of a bunch of colleagues.
Part of what makes it the greatest job in the world. Yeah, it's the brotherhood.
Yeah, well said.